All right, it's the DT Difference. It's 30 years experience in the game, DT Systems. E-collars we've been using for a while now, but let's quickly talk about their dummy launchers. They got the Super Pro Dummy Launcher and the Remote Dummy Launcher. It's a great way for you and your dog to get ready for duck season. Loud bangs, make sure your dog's cool with gunfire before you use it. But I want you to add it to your repertoire, bag of tricks, and get you and your dog ready for duck season. It's the Super Pro Dummy Launcher by DT. Gunner Kennels, baby. Hashtag man's best kennel. Well, it's also now hashtag man's best food crate. It's freaking raccoon proof. You can't get into this thing. Your dog can't bust into the lid and eat all the food. Trust me, I know Memphis has done it in the past. She looks like a blown up pumpkin. Boom. But not anymore. We've got the Gunner Kennel food crate. It's easy to pack, easy to store, keeps food dry, which food's an investment, man. That Purina, baby, it ain't cheap anymore. So keep it dry, good, all that stuff, easy to pack, easy to store. The Gunner Kennel food crate, slide into DMs if you'd like to learn more. Force fetch, what is it? It's super intimidating to so many people, yet it's not that difficult. I built a step-by-step process that helps you understand it, you and your dog can be successful in it, and it takes the intimidation away of the process so that you and your dog can get to your goals. That's what it's built for. Let me teach you how I do it so that you and your dog can do it. Different breeds, different personalities, problem solving, and more. Check it out. Links in the description. The Force Fetch course. Baby.
Well, we got another one for you. Welcome to the Lone Ducks Gun Dog Chronicles. We got my buddy Doug from Soggy Dog Gear on the line, and we're really excited to have him a part of our show and announce a fun contest later in the episode. So stay tuned so that you can enter to win a pretty sick dog training package. And I love using the word package. I don't know why. I just do. But first, let's do some of that good housekeeping, baby. We got that Yukonuba, the food that fuels the truck of Lone Duck. And cool little fact, Doug just finished his first bag on his Yukonuba challenge. Doug, tell us what you think.
So far, so good. We did a gradual switch from the old food because they were not doing so well on the old food. And so far, we've been good. Energy levels good. Coats look awesome. I've got a 26 for the older dog, and my younger dog's running the 30. So we're one third of our way through the 90-day challenge.
Good for you, man. Good for you. Well, I'm glad you took the challenge. It's I think you'll be very pleased. I always tell people, man, by 90 days, the dog should start showing signs of I wouldn't say improvement, because maybe they're already on a good nutritious dog food, but you want to try something different. But, you know, teeth, coat, you know, fecal samples, all that jazz is going to really start to shine through on that last third bag type of thing. Good on you, brother. Thanks for joining the Yukonuba team and taking the challenge, taking the plunge. And I'm glad your dogs are doing well. Next up, Gunner Kennels. You know it, man's best kennel. Made in America, company is awesome, and they share our values with the Unspoken Bond. If you'd like to get into a Gunner Kennel, you can shoot us a little direct message on Instagram, the old @LoneDuck, and we'll hook you up.
Fact of the day, for those of you who signed up for Gunner Kennels, their email, stuff like that, they've been sending out a lot of orthopedic dog beds lately. Old Mr. Buck.
Is he?
Oh, he's front and center, baby.
Front and center.
Front and center. Love it.
His handsome old bones like that orthopedic dog bed.
Yeah, handsome as hell.
That's right. That's what's up. My old yellow lab buck. All right, next up, Dogtra. The collar I've been using for, God, it's got to be close to 12 years now. Old buck's.
Oh, yeah, there 12, you go.
So about 12 years I've been using Dogtra and supporting them, and they support us. And Doug, you a Dogtra man, aren't you?
Absolutely. Love Dogtra. Love it so much. I'm going to be joining Mr. Pete Fisher of the Master Nationals to help rep some Dogtra. So I'm a Dogtra Edge RT guy through and through.
There you go.
Wouldn't have it any other way.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, I'm the same. Every day I use my Edge RT, and then I always sell the 1900S to your obedience dogs or your gun dogs. They've got the two unit, so two collars, two dogs with that 1902S, and if you have more than two dogs or you're a real serious trainer, you want to really get into it, that Edge RT won't do you wrong. And you can find those at LoneDuckOutfitters.com. And I bet you can find them on Soggy Dog, can't you?
Yeah, you can. And I don't know if I'd call myself a serious trainer, so I downgraded to the 1900S when we head out hunting.
Oh, yeah.
A little small, easier to carry.
Yeah, but yeah, that's just being like a smart man. Toss it in the waders, yeah. Like it's handy.
Yeah, 100% agree. I did the 1 year with the big RT, and it was the antenna and whatnot clunking around, but I absolutely love that 1900S for clipping down the inside of the waders. Perfect size.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Couldn't agree more. And that's why we sell it to everybody. You know, it's a great all-around unit. It's bulletproof. All right, next up, shoot or shoot.
Speaking of bulletproof,
shoot or shoot, baby. That bismuth. Kevin and I shot clay birds the other day, and we sucked.
It wasn't good.
And so
had a good time.
Yeah, having a good time and shooting, you know, actually hitting the clay birds is more fun than just shooting a gun near a clay bird.
In the vicinity.
In its vicinity. And so it opened our eyes. And I feel like because the whole country is on an ammunition lockdown, you know, I don't know about everybody else, but we're not shooting a ton so that we, like, keep the stockpile. It's easy to go through 100 rounds shooting clay birds in, like, a half an hour.
Right.
And then you just see your stockpile go down, like, well, down, down.
That was fun. Do it again next year.
I can tell you what we are stocked on. Bismuth. I'm not shooting bismuth at those clay birds. I'm waiting for old.
Put them down, though.
Old down. Eduardo Millardo, the green top.
That's what you're shooting bismuth at the clays, and I need to become a professional dog trainer.
Yeah, that's dude. Right. Yeah, no, hard no. So get you into that, Kent. Follow him on Instagram. It's Kent Cartridge on Insta. Lasty, but not leasty. No, we got some other ones. Hold on. Excuse me. Traeger Grills. Smoke them if you got them, baby. We got that meat. We got a little Traeger commercial coming out. Yours truly, Uncle Bob.
Just get excited.
Just get excited. It's a little quirky. It's a little awesome. You're going to be really, really pleased to know that I look like a dummy. A little bit of a dummy, but it's going to be a good commercial. I'm excited. The Traeger Ironwood 885. And, yeah, I don't know. We just got the final edit. There's maybe a few more things to tweak, so I don't look like such a dummy, but it'll be fun. It was really fun to do. So check them out, Traeger, on the old Instas. Smoke them if you got them. Mini shout-out. They're not a true sponsor. He's just a good friend of mine. Is Handler's Choice Leads.
I thought you were going to say Doug, but go on.
Oh, yeah. Well, hell yeah, Doug. Doug's going to have a whole episode about
Doug. Doug's got his own episode. You wait, Doug.
Yeah. Handler's Choice Leads, my boy Elliot down in South Carolina. He helps all of us guys, you know, maybe not so much up here in the Yankee land, but down south, everybody's got a Handler's Choice lanyard for their whistle and tabs for steady tabs or like the, Handler's Lead, I don't know, with the choke chain, taking them to the line. I've been using it this whole summer at my hunt house, and I'm really, really pleased with it. Elliot is a good dude. Check him out. Handler's Choice, baby. And Cable Gangs. He just sent me a new eight-dog cable gang. It's Cable Gangs with a Z on Instagram. And I told him we'd talk about it on the podcast. It is, if you like a tie out, if you want your dogs out of the dog box while you're training him, give them fresh air, or, you know, it's super humid and hot in the summertime, and you've got a wet dog, it's best to let them dry out a little bit, get them in the shade, let a little evaporation happen, help cool the dog down so you don't just stick a hot, humid dog, wet dog in a box, and that humidity fills around the dog, and his dog box is going to be pretty hot. So check him out on Instagram, Cable Gangs with a Z. All right. Lastly, Waypoint Outdoor Collective, you in tune with us, them in tune to you, all that jazz. And the old patreons.com/LoneDuckOutfitters. We've got 6 weeks until we announce our Pit Boss All Expenses Paid trip with me and Kevin to go hunt with the Pit Boss. And we do happy hours where we do live meetings and have fun. I answer your questions. It's like buying me and Kevin a beer. Jump on Patreon and be entered to win with the Pit Boss, baby. All right, Doug. Welcome to the show, dude.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. I've been waiting for this invite. I'm telling you, happy. You know, I'm not that quite podcast celebrity level yet, so I figured I'd be on the B list waiting for my turn to come up to the pros.
Well, it's funny because you're on the C list, but we've gotten all the way.
We already rifled through the B's, and here we are.
Oh, dude. Well, you invited me on your Hunter's Happy Hour with Uncle Ron Baim and Nick Larson and Birds, Buds, and Booze podcast, Tyler. Man, what a blast we had. But that was like COVID time.
Yeah, I want to say it's probably, about a year ago, May.
Yeah.
And probably one of the most watched episodes, I'd have to say, or these repeated watched episodes. And then I think when we were done, we probably sat up for another hour and a half, 2 hours, not recording and drinking and shooting the shit. So yeah, it was an absolute blast.
Yeah, man. I was half cocked by the end of that one, just being frank with everyone. Me and Uncle Ron, we get talking, excuse me, and the beers were flowing. He's a riot.
When you're doing it over video, you've got a clear vision of how fast Ron's putting them back, and you feel like there's this competition to at least keep up with him, to make him to feel like he's in good company, and not the average Joe's going to hang with Uncle Ronnie.
I agree. If you don't know who we're talking about, Uncle Ron is Ron Baim from the Hunting Dog Podcast, and another great podcast that you all should jump on and listen to. We're trying to line up a trip to Michigan. Me and old sweet girl Andy, we're going to go grouse hunting with my college buddy Hammer, who's running his first natural ability test in like 2 or 3 weeks. And Ron's been helping him out a little bit in their NAVDA chapter. And so I'm going to try and shoot two birds with one stone and hang out with my college buddy and grouse hunt and do a podcast with Uncle Ron.
Yeah, there's no downside there. Plus you get to see his infamous kennel and sit at the bar. And if you're really lucky, you can play in a Michigan game of euchre with him. He cheats, so you got to watch it.
I don't even know how to play euchre.
Oh, no. Well, we can teach it because I think I'm going to try to sneak down when you do make it up.
That'd be awesome, man. That'd be awesome. All
right. Hopefully you'll get sneaked up north.
Doug, tell everyone a little bit about yourself and who you are, what you do, and how you got into the game.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Doug Francio. I am the owner and head dog at Soggy Dog Gear. We are a very small gun dog supply company that, when I say small, it's me and my wife. We run it out of a basement, and now we're pushing out into the garage. We've been doing this for, I don't know, 7 years now. I needed a way to help fund the passion in the hunt test game. We were just newly married, so going out and spending $300 on a winger and then another $300 on electronics, that really wasn't in the cards for me. So I needed a way to help pay for some of that. And what better way was to take all of the extra play money we had and buy a bunch of gear and hope it sells.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's how I got into it, you know? Lone Duck was a t-shirt and hat company, and we sold e-collars and wingers and, you know, did the old Instagram and Facebook and
chasing hunt test and
yeah, traveling around
out back
people.
The car.
Yep. Yeah. That
grassroots is probably the most effective way of getting your name out, getting down and just meeting people, and word of mouth is a very powerful thing.
Absolutely. So what are some things that people can find on your website?
So basically anything and everything used to train a gun dog. We've got, you know, launchers and electronics, tracking collars, e-collars, not just for retrievers, but pointing dogs. And there's some stuff in there for the obedience pet people, and bumpers, holding blinds, a lot of hunt test stuff like gun stands and handler's jackets and whistles. It really is kind of an all-inclusive. We primarily focus in on the retriever stuff just because that's just where my heart is, and my roster of dogs are all retrievers. So our focus is there, but we have a little bit of something there for everybody.
That's cool. And you've got training books and DVDs?
I've not got into the DVDs yet. I've been talking with Barbara over at Young Glove, but I do have some books, some retriever handler drills, and if you listen long enough to make it to the end and we talk about the giveaway, that'll be included in it. But yeah, all inclusive. I mean, we have just about everything, and we're just now starting to branch off into our own product line. So we're building our own holding blinds and our own tie-outs and gun stands and whatnot. So we're starting to expand the brand and kind of make it, give it a little life and try to make it with some of our own products and hopefully fix margins and make it a little bit more competitive for everybody.
Good for you. And I noticed that you came, I didn't notice, that's a weird word. I saw and I liked your bird bag that you came out with.
Yeah. So that was, you know, kind of a serendipity thing that happened. A friend of mine, has been working on that bag, with another partner of his for a while. They brought over a bag from the UK, made a lot of changes to it, and improvements to make it almost escape proof. And, when it got down to past the testing phase and getting it out to market, he's got so much stuff on his other plate. He says, you know, Doug, you want to help take this over and kind of make it your own. And so I kind of really, it was a serendipity thing, but it's been a good product, and it's got a lot of great benefits, and it's something that hopefully everyone else has seen value in, and it's going to last a long time for everybody.
So what is it exactly? Tell everybody what it is and then what makes it special.
Yeah, so it's a British style game bag. So it's a little bit bigger. My wife would call it a purse. You know, so it's quite a bit larger than your typical black and orange mesh bag. It'll hold, you know, 6 to 10 pigeons. It'll hold a couple hen roosters, some ducks. And the Abbey guys are using them for ducks down in Rowdy's Club. And it's made out of a slick PVC and nylon in the inside, so the birds really can't get a grip on it. And then it's got gusset sewn on the top of it, so when you do open up the bag, the birds can't scoot out the side. So you can hold a lot of birds. There's really no way for the birds to escape, and the flap that kind of covers the bag is heavy enough to keep in even the roosters and ducks. So it's just a really good design to fit a lot of birds, good ventilation, and make the birds super comfortable. But then it's super easy in and out, where, you know, you're instead of pushing a spring to try to get a bag open to pull a bird out and losing dollars coming out the side of it, it's super easy to get in and out of.
How many cocks do you think you can fit in there?
Exactly two. Exactly two.
Nice. And I meant pheasants, everyone. Okay.
Yeah.
Relax.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. Two big pheasants can fit in that bag.
Yeah. Tails might be hanging out the back, but
that's all right.
It'll hold them.
How about Eduardo Millardo?
Eduardo, right? I don't know. You have to buy one and see.
Fair enough. All right. Cool, man. Well, I saw the video of you showing it to everybody and like launching the product, and I sat there and looked at it. I'm like, dang, that's pretty smart. You know, you can fit a dozen. It looked like you could fit a dozen pigeons in there, where all the other bags that you get, a break. Like, I go through pigeon bags for the pointing dogs here, like two, three a year. They're just junk. But I'm going to have to get me.
Yeah, that's a pretty common thing. And the nice thing, so when it was being tested, each bag was basically given to a couple pro field trial guys that work in the spaniel world, and they've cycled 2,000-3,000 birds to these bags, and with really good success with keeping them in and keeping birds alive. So they've each of these bags, but the demo bags, I mean, I think they were tested for 18 months, 2 years, with thousands and thousands of birds each bag. And they've held up, and with the exception of, you know, being a little dirty on the inside, still look new.
Good.
So there's a little bit of hesitation, I think, because, you know, they see the vent holes on the bottom, and there's only, I think, 10 vent holes that are just 1-inch holes across the bottom. And I think we're conditioned to see that black netting, and that it's offering some sort of superior ventilation for the birds. And if you're in super high honest, I think there might be some truth to that. But, you know, we've had these birds and these bags 80 degrees, 85 degrees. And, you know, if you're kind of doing the right thing and putting just the birds in that you need and getting them to where they need to go, the birds do really well in them.
That's awesome, man.
Probably the most impressive part of that video, though, is the fact that my dog sat on the place board while the bird flew away.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
I was not anticipating that. I thought we were going to have a funny blooper video.
That's
awesome. Didn't work out that way.
That's awesome. Tell us about your dogs. What you got?
Yeah, so I've got just about an 8-year-old yellow female. She's a pointing lab that I picked up in northern Michigan, and kind of cut my teeth really getting in for kind of the start to finish, you know, from the puppy through a finished dog with her. Made a crazy amount of mistakes with her. I think like every young trainer, it was an ego to get her to the test and get her to the line at a really young age. So I created all kinds of problems and deficiencies that I will probably spend the rest of her life trying to work out of. But a really crazy talented dog. So she does a lot of good things, and all of her faults are really my faults. And we then bred her to a field trial lab out in Montana. Mr. LL Cool J, who is a 2-year Derby dog winner, and I think he's just a couple points shy of an FC, done with an amateur handler and trainer. So he's a really talented dog. And so I think in the EE. So we got an all black litter, and I kept a female out of that. So Miss Luna, she just hit the 2-year mark, and he's probably the hottest dog that I've ever owned. And she's got dry for days. So as a guy that doesn't have a ton of experience training, I'm learning what it means to be patient and go slow.
That's extremely valuable to talk about, you know, and especially what would be fun to maybe take 5-10 minutes is, you know, the things that you learned with your first dog, that yellow that you had mentioned, like the ego of going to the line too young or pushing them too fast or some of the mistakes you made. First off, we've all made them. And second off, let's talk about them because that's what we all learn from. So what are some things that you saw that you did that you're like, I didn't do that with the new one?
Yeah, I think it's something that stuff you actually preach about all the time. It's, you know, we go on to double T and I see 2 days of success and we bounce out of double T and we're like, okay, let's move to pattern blinds, right? And it's, we get 2 days of pattern blinds or 3 days of pattern blinds and it's, let's jump to swim by, right? And just kind of moving that forward progression and moving super fast. And she was a talented dog and she got really good at tricking me into thinking that she was better than what she was. And a lot of it is, you know, you can build a repetition of things in 2 or 3 days, but you know, that's short-term memory. Long-term memory is the conditioning of doing thousands of reps. So it's impossible for them to forget it. Right. So I looked at what I did with Ollie, which is my first dog, was I taught her really good short-term memory. And that's really good at, and it's essentially tricking me into thinking that she was good and then pushing her and trying to rush her through the process and then putting her in a position to fail at the test where she just didn't have the obedience and didn't have the confidence to do it. So I created a dog that just was really anxious, getting into the whole environment, really anxious sitting on the line. And, you know, it was times that we got to a finished test and we got through the test, but couldn't get past the honor bucket just because her anxiety was just so great and built up so much in her just because I really rushed her through it and put her into things that she wasn't ready at like 7 months old. Gotcha. So I did a lot of wrong things for her. And her daughter is, I'm trying to do the complete opposite. I'm and almost probably swinging too far in that opposite way where I might be doing things too much and not moving as fast as I should. So it's, you know, where's that balance? And that's something that I'm still trying to figure out.
I think we all are still trying to figure it out. You know, we've had, lately I've had this conversation. Well, luckily I get to have it every week with people. And I am blessed with this podcast because we get to have guests on that every time I do one, I ask questions that I want help with, or maybe they'd say something like, God, I know that I needed that. Right. And so I think everybody, you know, if you aren't learning, you're dying, or if you aren't growing, you're dying. And, you know, I've had the pleasure of training with Clark Kennington, this, I don't know, 2 weeks ago now. And our buddy KD Matthews is a bite dog, obedience, personal protection, behavioral kind of guy. And he was in town visiting family and wanted to come and train with us. I'm like, hell yeah, man, come on.
That's fantastic. I'd like to spend an hour picking his brain.
You can and you should. He's super personable, like, overly personable, great guy, and his episode will come out in probably a week or so, I would guess. Kevin, he's nodding. Yeah, he said, yeah, about a week. But he picked up on things that we do that Clark is a top contender in our country for Super Retriever Series. He takes 15, 20 dogs to Master National in the Grand and passes them. I mean, he's just a stud, right? But
yeah.
But KD saw things that we all don't see because we do it every day. And he just brought a few things to light that was like, huh. And me and Clark looked at each other like, huh, son of a gun may be onto something. And it was really neat. Great discussion. And then I got the pleasure to do like a mock contest day with my friend Trish Jagoda, who's been on the podcast. And she's been doing this for 40-something years. You know, she was at the first NARA test when the first hunt test ever happened. You know, how much knowledge does she have packed into that brain?
Yeah, it'd be like talking to Omar Driscoll about that first test. That's crazy.
Yeah, it was unreal. And so she, you know, I'm like, hey, you know, nitpick me. Tell me what you would do different. And some of the things that she brought up were like, interesting. All right, let's think about that. And so over the last 2 weeks, I've been thinking a lot about how I do things and why we do things. And so it's just fun to be reflective. It's fun to think outside of the box. And, you know, that to me is the rub. Like, you can train a dog, and I feel like everybody who listens to this podcast is doing a good job with their dog, right? But there's always something we can work on. Always.
Yeah, and I think, you know, if you want to be, you know, you can be a good trainer, you know, and kind of learn as you go. And if you want to be a great trainer, you have to become a student of the game, right? You have to be wanting to learn and wanting to be open to ideas and understanding kind of the different principles that maybe push you outside the norms of what the hunting dog world is. And it's funny you brought up the bite dog podcast, and I'm looking forward to hearing it. It's just the thing about, it seems like every other dog sport besides the gun dog world is that they figured out how to handle reactive dogs. They've kind of mastered the ability to take a reactive dog or a dog with high drive and impulse and harness it and put it into check and get it to work for the dog versus against it. And it's something that I've been thinking a lot about, especially with this dog that, you know, she's got so much drive, and I'm finding the balance of how to help her manage that has been really hard for me. You know, we're constantly taking steps backwards and reevaluating processes, and what would normally work for every 99% of gun dogs or retrievers, I'm having to create this completely new process because the way that she learns is just completely different than anything that I've experienced before. And those bite dog guys and all the police canine guys, they, you know, are arguably working with some of the highest prey drive dogs out there, and they've just figured it out. And I've been really wanting to kind of get into that world. I've been looking into the Michael Ellis. He's, you know, a bite dog trainer, and he does a lot of Schutzen and kind of really evolved the marker training principle in helping dogs kind of understand how to handle that reactiveness and using it as a tool for those types of dogs. And so I'm looking forward to it. And it's something that I, you know, hope to continue to explore, because I think if we can figure out how to do that and bring it in, a lot more amateurs will go a lot further with their dogs, and, you know, we won't be washing so many out, you know, at young ages because they're, you know, chalking them up to too much drive or untrainable.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the theme of our podcast for like all summer long is these young dogs that I've got that are extremely talented, you know, gifted, but sometimes they can't get out of their own way because of the drive. And, you know, our world is breeding hotter and hotter and hotter dogs and arguably softer dogs, you know, not all of them, but for whatever reason, it's like they're mildly sensitive yet high drive. So, you know, corrections can really tweak them pretty good, but then that can create more problems because they're thinking about corrections instead of doing right. And I agree with you. I think these guys, meaning the bite dog world, the Malinois, you know, if you're not careful, he'll bite your arm off dog.
Yeah.
But here's the thing that, like, I think kind of KD brought up to some degree is like, those dogs still will make mistakes. And we don't see that on Instagram, and we don't see that in the YouTubes and, you know, whatnot. So, like, just like I guess I do my best to show dogs making mistakes at times during our stuff so that people can see how I handle it and describe it and talk about it. But at the end of the day, you know, most people are seeing the good and they might see like 10% of the bad or 20% of the bad. They don't see right. how you've built it from start to finish. Not because I don't want to show it. It's just like, I'm busy training. I got to have two hands. I got to be thinking. I can't be acting, not acting, but you know, on camera, if you will. I got to be.
Well, and if you're worried about the camera, then you're missing the timing on your dog.
That's right. As soon as you pull your phone out to video for the client, the dog screws up. That's just the name of the game.
Yep.
So I guess the point I'm trying to make is he did say like, nah, man, they're not perfect. They make mistakes too, but they have figured out a way to cap the drive and have more discipline, because if they didn't have that discipline, somebody's getting ripped to shreds. And I really don't still know how they do it other than their level of structure and obedience is by far way better than ours. And it's not.
And I think you hit it right there. The obedience is way better than ours. And where we're trying to, as gun dog owners, push to get them retrieving and picking up ducks and getting them in the water and feeling like we have to indoctrinate this, this mindset into a dog that should genetically want to do that. We're pushing them into it just because that's kind of just always been the rule. Get them on ducks, get them on birds. And while a bite dog guy is getting that same puppy, knowing he's going to be a bite dog, but the dog doesn't know he's going to be a bite dog till he's 10, 12 months old, 13 months old, because that they're worried about the foundation on the front end of it versus trying to deal with it the rest of the dog's life.
That's right. He said it's easy to get him to bite. It's hard to get him not to bite. And I think, yeah. you know, if we were to look at that from the retriever world, right? Not every dog likes to swim. Not every dog likes to pick up a duck. Not every dog has the same drive that we're talking about. And so we revert back to build drive. How do you build drive? Short sessions, happy bumpers, get them jacked up, high-pitched voice, da-da-da-da-da. Well, I can tell you right now, my little puppy Jolene, dude, she came out the womb wanting to retrieve. She came out the womb swimming. She doesn't need me to build her drive. It's in her DNA to be a machine. It just is. Same with Quinn. Same with Memphis. Same with, you know, all of them, my own, really. But at the end of the day, their obedience is what keeps them thinking straight. And it doesn't have to be hard on them. It just has to be consistent. So one of the things that KD brought up that's interesting, bud, because maybe it'll resonate with you a little bit. So he watched me and Clark train, and he's like, I've never seen dogs do what you guys do, stopping on a whistle at 200-some yards, taking a perfect cast. We had a great day. Dogs look good. But then he's like, I've never heard more people say sit and hear and heal and the dog blow them off once you got off the line. So he was saying, in context, in the training moment, you've done it so much with that dog that in the moment, they know, boom, 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 get a duck. Boom, boom, do this, do that, do this, do that. I got a duck. So in context, and what I mean by, I'm trying to explain the in context. From the truck to the line, he's like, they were loose and sloppy and, you know, screwing around and not listening to you. But then once they got to the line, boom, sit, steady, stopped on a whistle, hammered the mark, you know, did everything you asked them to, boom. As soon as they were done with the line, here, come here, here, no, here, here. He's like, what the heck is this? So in the moment, they've been trained so much in the moment, in context, that they're flawless, damn near, right? They still make mistakes, but you've done it so much in the field that they know their job. It's conditioned so much. Repetition, repetition, repetition. You know, they're 4 years old, 2 years old, whatever. They've been in it. They get it. But then he's like, everything else is so sloppy. And he's like, how many times have you told the dog sit and then just start walking and the dog walks at heel? I'm like, oh, man. Every time. He's like, you didn't tell it to heel. He just walked with you. So he broke sit. I go, interesting. Made me think. And he goes, you moved your hand a little bit, and that dog moved its butt a little bit. Now, on one hand, I like that because I can I'm fine-tuning my dog, right? I got a little body language stuff, and I work. Mm-hmm. The dog works with me. We work together. But he goes, you didn't tell it anything. Now, I get where he's coming from, but there are times that you need that. But the point he was trying to make that I'm trying to make now, and he was a little more eloquent than I'm being, I guess, but if I told you sit, don't move until I tell you to do something else. Sit. Now heal. Now sit. Now heal. Sit. Don't move again. And so I've been practicing, and I've seen an improvement. He's been gone 2 weeks now. I will do a drill from my truck to the line, in my yard, going to and from the airing yard, all sorts of stuff. And I used to do it all the time, but I forgot. You just don't do it anymore.
You just get busy.
Sure. You just get through the reps, right? I got to get another dog out. Boom. Got to get another dog out. Boom. But I will tell the dog sit and keep walking. I don't slow my pace down. And if they don't sit, they're getting some sort of correction back at sit. And then I walk away. I do a little loop around them. I stand next to them. Now heel, sit, and I keep walking. And I'm just trying to take what he mentioned and say, all right, let's do a little more obedience with these guys. My high-level dogs need more obedience. That's mildly embarrassing.
Eye-opening. You know, I think, eye-opening. You think labs just, let's say dogs in general compartmentalize tasks so well, right? So they compartmentalize what it means to be on training grounds, and that means a certain set of rules. They compartmentalize when you're at a, when you're out in the field hunting, that's a certain set of rules. And when you get back home, they compartmentalize or that set of rules. So, you know, we've essentially created these multiple subsets of rules that when in reality, all of them should be the same. And it's just us keeping going back to a matter of fact of consistency.
That's exactly his point. Great word is consistency. That's it. It's routine. Yeah. It's consistency. And then it becomes black and white for the dog. This is okay. This is not okay. And I think if we all think about the last 7 minutes of this discussion and say, where in my day-to-day have I shown consistency and then shown gray area? Dogs understand black and white. Gray area is tough for them. They're kind of like, huh, what do you mean? Or I'm not sure of myself here. But if it's black and white and I've shown them and I've taught them and I've done it over and over and again and it's black and white, they're going to prosper, they're going to be more confident, and they're going to do it. As soon as you enter that gray zone, now they're like, well, did I get away with something? Is he mean now? Does he mean not now? I'm not sure. And so I've been better in my airing yard with them. I've been better just, and now I'm noticing the dogs who are sloppier than the others. Like, you kind of start seeing, like, boy, I had to call that dog 3 times before it listened. This should be snappy.
Something that you did a podcast, you're going to forgive me, is it maybe 2 or 3 episodes ago about just high drive dogs and dogs with giddy up, right? You know, I would consider myself a really task focused person. So I'm moving boom, 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 and it's task, task, task. And, you know, I wonder if there's something to taking a high drive dog. And when we get to the training grounds, I think as a trainer, we almost become task focused because, you know, we come out with a purpose. We know the test we want to run. We know that they need to get to the holding blind. They need to get to the line and they need to get back to the truck. So we're taking a dog that is predispositioned to want to go, and we're creating these tasks, you know, in them a little bit, and we're kind of enabling them to be a little bit, you know, too eager to get to the line or too eager to get to the holding line because we, to your point, that, you know, we hope to get consistency. So we create these routines for them. And when we don't change out the routine, like getting them out and doing a session of obedience and doing a different session the next time, or going to the holding blind, but then doing a session of obedience before you go to the line. So you're changing the moments in time, or you're changing their picture of when things could happen. So you're kind of keeping them guessing what they need to do. So they come out of the box and they're wondering, what do I need to do before I get to the line? Where right now, like I take a dog like Luna, she gets home, we get to the training ground, she comes out of the box, we go air, she knows that she's got to come to heel, she's got to get to the line, and she gets, you know, gets to the line, and she sometimes got happy feet because she's just getting that anxiety built up. Where I'm wondering now that we're, you know, kind of as we're working through this talk, is how do we break the routine and keep them constantly thinking of, you know, what do I have to do next to get to that line? And maybe it is, you know, inserting the obedience at different portions between the truck and the line, and making them think about, hey, just because I'm out of the box doesn't mean I get to go do what I need to go do. There's something in between, and how many steps I have to take is unknown because it changes. It feels like it changes all the time.
Yeah. That's exactly it. I think that's a huge part. And, you know, today with Aries, I did the same thing you said. And yesterday, in fact, so 2 days in a row without me knowing that I was doing it, like you said, like instead of being conscious of it, I'm like, you know what he needs to come into the line and he's going to walk to the line. He's fired up. Boom, turned right around, correction with the collar, and healed away. And then we walked. I bet I did 10 minutes of just heel work, sit, heel, you know, and all of a sudden you could tell that he just relaxed and he wasn't getting excited and anxious anymore that we were going to the line. And then we walked to the line and bang, bang, bang. And so breaking the routine, that muscle memory of truck, air, holding blind, mm-hmm. line, birds. And I do switch things up. So like every time I walk out of the holding blind, it's not marks. It might be we're running blinds, or it might be a mark. Then you run a blind, then you get your mark. Or there's other more advanced things that you can do with an older dog. But in the end, breaking the always and keeping them thinking and having them earn that reward of the bird should help cap that drive and have them be, what's the word I want to use? Maybe self-conscious, not self-conscious, but
they're more focused on you. They become more biddable and want to be more focused on the team because they're wanting to get there. So they're cooperating a little bit more to figure that out. You know, one of the hardest things I've ever done as a drill wise is just take my crazy high drive dog from the holding or the truck to the holding blind and then walk out and make him go sit on the honor bucket first. And now instead of honoring after it, they're honoring first, and it's confusing and it's a lot. And if I need a dog to, you know, to correct a dog for breaking, that's the way that I do it. we make him come out of the blind and go to the bucket first. Yeah. And I think there's a lot of truth to all that. It's consistency is important, but it's, you know, watching the routines that we're creating and making sure that it's different and forcing the dog into doing different things. So they're not anticipating every action. It's, you know, it's the same way we prevent auto cast, right? You go back to the box or to the back pocket 6 times to 1, you know, because we don't want to create a routine or a pattern that they recognize.
Yeah.
You know, and it's even like, you know, I know that denying retrieves is something that's, you know, kind of super popular in our world. And I had a trainer once tell me, his name's Jordan Hardock. So he's a Spaniel guy. And, so he asked me why I denied retrieves. And that's, I don't know. It's, you know, they need to realize that every dog, you know, every retrieve's not theirs, or, you know, she scooted, or she, you know, she did a controlled break or whatnot. And he says, you know, it's pressure. It's, you know, you're creating control pressure, but you know, what if you tried not denying the retrieve, but now you have to do 2 or 3 things more before you go pick that retrieve up, right? So now it's heel away from the line. Now it's a healing drill. Now it's this, now it's that. And you're creating these moments that are taking them away from the line, and you're giving them an additional task. And then you bring them back and you let them get it. And then there's an anticipation that just because the bird falls, there might be an extra step. So you're creating steadiness because of that, because they start to learn that it's not just bird falls and they go, or marks thrown and they go, that sometimes they may have to do something different. So there's a conditioning that happens. And, you know, with Luna, I started off with the denying retrieves, but it never really solved the problem. And incorporating this multiple step thing that they start to creep, or I need to, you know, to fix a break or control break, And you know, sometimes it just means that I've got a place board off to the side and I make her go place and then come back to me and then send her, you know, over the course of 2-3 months, it had a huge impact on in her steadiness. And, I don't think that I'll ever deny a retrieve again because of it. Not to say that it's not, you know, that denying retrieves isn't the right way, but it's breaking routines and breaking, patterns that, you know, that's forcing, you know, her to be a steadier dog.
Yeah. So phenomenal point, dude. This is a lot of value that is great discussion. I love this. So we were talking a lot about drive cap, and I didn't know what drive cap was. It's a fancy, it's bite dog world, it's obedience people world. We don't use this terminology in the retriever training game. And so I'm trying to learn about drive capping, and as I'm listening to these people describe it on other podcasts or, you know, making phone calls, I'm like, what the heck do you mean by this, man? He's like, well, they have to earn it by doing this, this, and this. I'm like, shit, we already do that. We are drive capping. Every time you make a dog earn what they want and then earn it a little more and then earn it a little more. And like, so an example would be a baby example would be a puppy and a food bowl and making them learn to wait for their food and then, you know, telling them it's okay. That would be a form of drive capping. Their food drive, and you're making them do X, Y, and Z until they can get it, right? For a retriever, it's your steady. You have to sit still, see marks fall, run a blind, then pick up your marks, or just sit still and then pick up your marks. That's still drive capping. But doing what you're saying with, like, the example of not just doing a denial where they watch you go and pick it up and then you throw it again and pick it up and all of a sudden they sit still and now they get it. That is drive capping. But having them do a few extra tasks like you would a puppy eating the food. Hey, sit. Okay, now shake. Lay down. Okay, go eat. Right? We're starting to incorporate other tasks to get them to earn it and then they go and get it. Is interesting and a really cool little thing that I'm thinking about my young gun dogs that are about to go home in 3 weeks, you know, for hunting season. I'm thinking, boy, that would be cool. Like they're standing next to you, sitting next to you, throw a mark. Hey, kennel, go jump on the place board, send them from there, like a remote send.
Right.
You know, just make them think a little bit off their feet because stuff happens out in the duck blind and just having them think would be cool. Yeah.
100%. And sometimes, you know, I think there's levels of severity too of the work that, and I don't, not in a mean, in a means of correction, but you know, a controlled break is a lot different than them scooting their butt. So the amount of steps that I incorporate into that process is really a reflection of how bad they really screw up. Right. Did they do a controlled break and I needed to call them back 10 feet and then I'm going to really make them work for it where something smaller. So even the routine after that isn't creating a pattern because sometimes, you know, again, we don't want them to the scenario where you're offering a house dog a treat and they're spinning around and sitting and rolling over all at the same time, trying to figure out which one they need to do, which behavior they need to offer up to do it. I don't want them offering behaviors unless they're asked. So I don't want the guesswork of, oh crap, I messed up. I need to go do this, this, and this. Offer these behaviors and then I get to go do it. No, I'm going to tell you what you need to do because that's the piece that you missed. You missed the fact that I asked you to do something and you chose to do something different. So you're going to have to earn it, you know, essentially earn that retrieve by completing tasks that I ask you, not that you just voluntarily offer. So that's where you're keeping that switched up and even that process of, you know, hey, we're not going to deny it, but let's go do some work has to be different as well, I think.
Yeah. Plus it builds memory.
Yeah, there you go.
A happy byproduct. Very cool, man. I loved that little, those are some great little training tips. But, all right, so we've talked about your website. We've talked about the cool products that you got on there, especially that new bird bag that, you know, maybe Uncle Kevin is making a little note in his brain for Christmas for his buddy Bob. And, you know, great little training tips. But let's talk about the contest.
Let's do it.
Let's do it, buddy. I'm excited for this.
I am too. I was hoping to have it out at noon today, but got sidetracked with work and my normal 9 to 5. So it didn't happen, but I'm about 90% ready to have it. And should we do it? I'll probably put it out first thing in the morning.
Yeah.
So it'll be Friday morning.
All right. Well, we should probably, what we'll do is we'll launch this podcast before like KD and maybe Clark's, so that people who hear it tomorrow will be in tune with the post that
I can put this up tomorrow morning and then everything aligns well.
Beautiful.
So does that move you off the C list and back to, into the bottom of the B list or?
Oh no.
No, you might be D list.
You're D for Doug.
D for Doug. By the way, all right, Doug, before we get into the contest. Did you watch Doug Funny when you were a kid?
I did.
Doug Funny. Are you like our age? All right. So you got a year or two, but you're still in the Doug Funny range.
Oh, yeah. Eddie Mayonnaise and all.
Oh, baby. So little known fact, every listener, Kevin's nickname when he was a baby, young boy, you know, a toddler, was Doug Funny. We used to love watching the show, and my dad used to call him Doug Funny. And, yeah. And I still know the theme song.
I'm expecting Kevin to have a Red Dog named Porkchop someday.
Oh, wow.
Red Dog. He was like blue, wasn't he?
Don't you have Goldens?
Oh, good call. Yeah, I do. Thank you.
And yes, she is a Red Dog.
Yeah. All right. I'll get there.
If it's a Fluffy, we probably couldn't be friends. No, I'm just kidding. All Goldens matter.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, it's 2021. We can't judge.
I appreciate that.
That is awesome. Yeah, no, Porkchop would be a great name.
That would be a good name.
Yeah. All right. Well, you need to get another dog.
Very Traeger-esque, too. Like, ooh, smoke them.
Smoking pork chops.
I'd work on that, but yeah, there's something there.
No, great show. All right, let's get into the contest. Sorry, I digress.
So who came up with this idea?
Doug did.
You know, I did, yeah. I was talking with Mr. Pete Fisher from Dartra, and we were talking about Mass and Aspen. I said, you know, I'd really like to do a giveaway. Would you be gracious enough to help me out with it? So he said, sure. You know, I'll send you a 1900S. And instead, he sent me an Edge RT. So for those not in the know, that's a pretty nice, expensive collar. And one of the things that I think, you know, that I struggled with most as an amateur trainer was just going and getting knowledge from reputable sources. You know, YouTube was not a safe place for getting retriever knowledge. It screwed up a lot of tasks that I was trying to teach my dog. So I wanted to incorporate a trainer that was offering value to the community. And who else would I go to but Mr. Uncle Bob?
Well, who did you go to first, second, third, fourth, and fifth?
I was going to say, am I the C-list?
Well, yeah. Yeah, I mean, Z, yes, you know. Mike Lardy told me no. Danny Farmer told me no. Dennis Voigt said no.
Those bastards.
Rex Carr.
Yep.
Yeah. But then we ended up on you. You know, it was a good. No, I'm super excited about it. It's, you know, I'm gonna call it the SDG, so Soggy Dog Gear No Pro Challenge. And we're gonna give away the Edge RT. I've got a Building a Retriever, which is just a book about retriever drills. So not how to train a dog, but just cool drills and things that you can do with your dog to develop skills like double T and teaching X and Y drill and kind of getting into the more micro details of and the nuances of how those drills work. You're gonna throw in some collars and bumpers, and I got a Kato place board. So you can start working on early puppy development with the place board, and then you know, we got 30 minutes with Mr. Bob Owens for a private Q&A, which should be, you know, the highlight of the whole contest. I'm going to assess the value at about $500 for that half hour.
You're gracious.
Yeah.
They can get it free on the podcast, but yeah, I dig it.
So Doug's not a math guy. That's okay. No, that's all right.
Yeah, you know, but they can get it free, but do they get to ask the specific questions that they want? So what's the value of that?
A good point.
One-on-one, 30 minutes, rapid fire questions, not having to hear the same question. I mean, to hear a question from somebody else.
Oh, I dig it.
So they get to ask specific questions. So no, it'll be good. So what we're going to ask is you basically go out, use some creativity, be funny. I mean, it can be serious, but go out and create a 60 second or less video of why you need help. You know, what makes you not a great dog trainer, And it's okay to make poke fun of yourself, make fun of yourself a little bit. But the funnier it is, I think the easier it will be to make it into the finals. So I figured me, you, and Kevin can pick the top five, and then we'll send it off to Instagram to pick the final winner.
I think that's awesome, man. And really, it's geared around helping someone who is having a good time training their dog and they want more. And so you're giving them some tools of the trade to do the job, as well as, you know, just let's have fun together. Let's all chit chat about training dogs and how do we problem solve. And man, I'm in. I'm excited.
Yeah, I am too. And hopefully we'll get the bigger the turnout. I'm hoping to be able to do it again next year and get more, you know, more sponsors involved and get bigger prizes. So if we can make a really good run at it this year, we're going to make it really big next year.
That's awesome. Well, I dig it. Why don't we throw a bag of Yukonuba in on this contest?
Yeah, for
sure. I'll pay for that.
Done.
All right.
Done. Yeah, absolutely.
We can think of some other stuff too.
And we'll throw in some Lone Duck gear.
Yeah.
Hat and t-shirt or something. How's that sound?
Perfect. And we'll throw it out there for what, 10 days, I think, from Friday. I think tomorrow is probably the 29th, or tomorrow's the 30th. So we'll call it 10 days from the 30th.
Beautiful. Yeah. Now, exactly what are the rules? Because you kind of had it written down. They had to be 18 years or older. It's not sponsored by Instagram. They have to tag.
No profanity.
Yeah.
Keep it clean. Clean humor. Family fun. Family friendly. And that's really it. It's got to be in by 11:59 on the last day and be in the lower 48 just from shipping. I guess we could probably open it up and ship it wherever. I guess it's not that big of a deal.
So if it's 18 or older, we can't send them any of the other bush stuff I have laying around the house. That's good to know. I won't include that in the package.
Perfect. So if you're 21 and over, you might win something else fun.
Yeah, maybe. Hey. Yeah, see how it goes.
I'll throw a six pack in my of tall boys too. I'll go crazy.
Fancy.
That's right.
He doesn't tell you that they're empty cans because you can't ship alcohol.
Only if you get caught.
Yeah.
Bubble wrap it.
That's right.
Tin foil.
That's awesome, man. Well, I'm really excited for this contest. So jump on, it's at Soggy Dog Gear on Instagram. And you know, by the time this podcast airs, you're going to be able to go on his Instagram, follow him, and then read the detailed rules, and over the next couple days, figure out what you're struggling with your dog and why you need our help and why this gear package will help you. Shoot a less than 60-second video and be entered to win. Bingo, bango, bongo, baby.
Easy peasy.
Lemon squeezy.
There it is.
Well, I'm excited, man, and I think I'm really excited that you're going to be at the Master National with Pete. He's a class act. He's been on our podcast before, and wealth of information. He is a retriever trainer himself and is, like, retired from it. He sold his business and now works as, like, the head of sales, you know, pro guy. And, God, I've known him for 10-plus years, and he's just genuinely a class act. So
yeah, he's a lot of fun to be with. I'm super excited about being Master National. It's the closest I'm going to get to Master Nationals while I still have kids in the house. Just the amount of time and effort to train a dog to that level, I'm years away. So I'm just excited to go out and get to hang out with everybody, meet a bunch of new people, and rep an awesome product, and get to watch the dogs work.
Cool, man.
The Lord knows that I'm about 15 years from having enough time to go do that.
Nah, hard no, buddy. You got this. This little Luna dog sounds like she's a real contender for it. I mean,
she's a talented dog. She's probably the most talented dog I've ever had. She's my fourth lab now. She's got her dad's genes. She's, you know, we just competed in the Northern Michigan Retriever Cup Super Singles, and we won that.
Nice.
You know, she was crazy fast, crazy accurate, but I got to figure out how to control her. Impulse and get her a little bit more under control. Got some swim by issues to figure out, but she's crazy talented. So maybe 5 or 6 years from now, you know, you might see us out there.
Yeah. I think you can do it, buddy. I think you can do it. Last couple questions I want to ask you is I want to know a little bit more about your duck hunting and your and what you like to do up there. What is your hunting season like?
So my hunting season is really different now that I've had kids. You know, my goal right now is 100% to getting them, my youngest, or I guess my oldest, involved in the sport. So instead of doing the, you know, going up to the UP or, the Upper Peninsula or, you know, heading out across the state, I've become more accustomed to hunting, a lot of state land, puddle ponds and really small lakes, easy accessible from a 6-year-old. Just to really getting them in. So I've kind of given up the big water chasing divers and whatnot. And right now we're really just focused in on chasing puddle ducks with a 6-year-old. And I do, you know, when he's not with me, I do some chasing of honkers. So we do a lot of field hunting. Not quite where I live, but about 2 hours north of here. I've got a friend that's got a goose hunting club, so to speak. That's a fairly large couple of leases that we go and chase honkers in the field on in late season mallard. So we do a lot of duck hunting, a lot of duck hunting, but I also probably equal amounts of grouse hunting. So I'm pretty fortunate that the back of my property butts up to about 15,000 acres of state and federal land. Whoa. So I can literally walk out my backyard and I'm a quick go-kart ride or a golf cart ride into grouse habitat.
Nice.
So I spend a lot of time chasing grouse, and then I can drive within 30 minutes to be in woodcock country.
Good for you. You take your Labradors out there for the old grouseys?
Yeah. So I have, I've got my first lab. She's a pointing lab. She's a grandmaster in the ATLA, and she does fairly well with pointing grouse. She's not a German shorthair by any scope or an English setter. But in the means of a versatile dog and being able to handle grouse, she does a great job. Her daughter is all in on a flushing. She's all in on flushing. Her drive does not give her any point whatsoever. So I've gone from German shorthairs to labs and now, flushing labs. So I've spent a lot of time trying to understand how to train a flushing dog. So we're really just kind of breaking through and, you know, I use a different type of whistle for it. And, I've used play scores to really develop the quartering and her draw. And, we're just now starting, drills to develop that steadiness, after the flush. So we've got homers and whatnot. So even when we get out in the grouse, that's really what we're going to be focused on this year is getting her steady through the flush, not necessarily through the shot, but, I'm going to use this season to kind of really develop that and narrow that down. And hopefully if I get out to South Dakota at the end of the season, November, early December, that'll all pay off.
Good for you, man. Good for you. Well, like I said earlier in the show, I am planning to road trip it so I can bring sweet girl Andy, my English setter, out to Michigan, hang out with my buddy Hammer and Uncle Ron and you. And I would love it. Where are you in Michigan?
So if you're looking at your left hand, right where your pinky and your ring finger meet, I'm basically right there. Right there on Lake Michigan. I'm probably, 6 miles from the lake shore up in Traverse City. So I'm about 2 hours north of Ronnie.
I gotcha. Cool.
So when I come down, we're going to have to rely on him to come up with some covers because I don't typically head south. I normally go north.
Very good, and then me and you will drop some pins on Onyx or something so we can go snipe his spots.
Yeah, well, they're Ronnie, so I wouldn't put a lot of credit into defining grouse, but, you know, we might find some porcupines.
You don't have a German dog. You're going to end up finding a pile of beer cans.
That's what I was thinking. You just follow the empty Miller lights along the road, and you're like, oh, this must be it. That's awesome.
No, he's been there a long time, so I'm sure he's got some hot covers.
Yeah.
We'll hopefully get him to share a couple of them.
I'm really excited, man. It'll be probably late October will be my guess. Late October into maybe early November, which is maybe not the best time per se, but
perfect time.
Oh, perfect time.
Best time.
That's what I wanted to hear. Yeah. Excellent.
Late October is perfect. Early October, especially up more, you know, once you start pushing north a little bit, there's a lot of leaves and whatnot, but once you get into that fall shuffle and the birds start or the leaves start dropping and, you know, you can start seeing and getting through the woods easier. You can get into that prime cover, and that's really when the birds start turning on. So you're becoming at a perfect time. And honestly, that first snow, if you happen to get that first snow while you're here, that's probably the best time to go chase grouse. At least it's the most fun for me.
Why?
I just like it. It's a little bit telling. You can track the birds in the snow. You can see their little feet, and you can get into good covers, and you quickly find out where the birds are and where they're not. But it honestly, it's just the prettiest walk when you get into the popple and the aspen, and you've got fresh snow, and it's just my favorite time of year.
I love it, man. Well, I'm really, really, really excited. All right, tell everybody one more time where they can find you and the contest, and go from there.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube at Soggy Dog Gear. Super easy. You can find us on our website, soggydoggear.com. And I'm just happy to be and glad you had me on, man. It's been a lot of fun.
It has been a lot of fun. We should do a happy hour again, like whenever you want. Are you still doing Hunter Happy Hour?
Once we got into the hunting season, it was really hard to keep up on it. And when I headed out to North Dakota to go hunt with Tyler, and we were both out hunting till dark, it was two of us missing, and it wasn't practical to kind of keep it up, because, we're dog people and hunting people first. And then the show was kind of just something we were doing for fun to get through COVID.
Yeah.
And so it fell off. I think we all miss it a little bit. And I think we'd all enjoy it doing it, probably not the frequency of which we were, grinding one out every week. But no, I think it would be fun to get everybody back together. And even if we do just a one-shot show, just to get everybody back and drink some beers and have a good time. So I'll work on it.
Let's set it up. Let's set it up before September or something so that we can do like a preseason. And I'm inviting myself right now, by the way.
Yeah.
Because it was that much fun when we were on it. But let's do it, man.
And we worked through A, B, and C list already, so perfect timing.
Damn. I love it. Dang. Well, yeah, absolutely. That would be a lot of fun. And, man, it'd be great to – we got to talk to Nick Larson again, see how his puppy's doing.
Yeah, and his other dog, I think
– Harley.
Harley. Well, I'm trying to say, blew his ACL or something like
that. Yeah, he did.
Seems to be doing better, so that's awesome. Hopefully good enough for the season.
Yeah, I talked to him, about 3 days ago, and it sounded like he was easing him back into things, and Hartley was doing well. So it's super encouraging, and I think he's excited to have both dogs back on the ground and increase his dog power a little bit. Sure.
That's good.
And just so everybody knows, Nick Larson is the Project Upland podcast guy. So if you want to follow them as well, that would be cool too. But all right, Doug, the man, the myth, the legend. Thank you for joining us on our show. I'm excited for our contest. We're going to have a lot of fun with this. Everybody, please do me a favor. Go to Soggy Dog Gear on Instagram. Read the rules. Join the fun. You get a bunch of cool gear. You get a 30-minute Q&A with me. Let it rip, baby. Let's go. All right, Doug. Thank you for joining the show, man. I appreciate you so much.
Thank you.
Hey, patreon.com/loneduckoutfitters is a community that we built to help you and your dog on your journey to next duck season. There's videos that don't hit YouTube. There's happy hours where we drink a couple beers and I answer your questions every other week. And by the way, if you join between now and September 1st, you're entered to win a hunt with me and Kevin and other Patreon members. So jump in, let's go, join the community. We appreciate it, and we'll see you there.
Hey listeners, Nick Larson here, host of the Birdshot Podcast. As fans of this show, you may be interested in the conversations on the Birdshot Podcast, where we discuss all things upland hunting, from upland birds and their habitat and conservation, to the shotguns, bird dogs, and gear used to pursue them. Whether you're a seasoned upland hunter or just getting started and wanting to learn more, I interview a wide range of guests, each with their own unique perspective and valuable experience to share. If you're on the hunt for more upland hunting conversation, please consider subscribing to the Birdshot Podcast today. We'll be right back.